Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers who work in many fields and teach us the art of living, how to work in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace, and use the technological advances available to us. Approximately every 2,500 years, a new teacher brings a body of teaching to humanity that is suited to our needs at that particular time. Usually this takes place at the end of an age. Right now, as the age of Pisces declines and our solar system aligns with the constellation Aquarius, new energies are beginning to make themselves felt. As these Aquarian energies of sharing and justice stream into our planet, the need for change can be seen more clearly. A period of chaos ensues as the old order lessens its grip on humanity, and the impulse of sharing, justice and peace inspires us to move forward in evolution as a united group. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our regular Friday program. Hope you're all well for this morning. I've got a piece here on a lady by the name of Alexandra David Neal. Some of you may have heard of her. She was a completely remarkable woman, and particularly taking into account the times in which she lived. She was born in 1868, and she lived for 101 years, so died in 1969, which is remarkable for anybody, really. But more so for the profusion of her activities and the breadth of her interests, for her many travels throughout the Orient, which by then was still largely unknown, and quite mysterious and difficult to penetrate at her time as well. As an Orientalist and Tibetologist, study of Tibet, she was an opera singer, a feminist, a journalist, an anarchist, a writer, an explorer. She was a Freemason. In fact, she was a founder of the co-Freemasons, allowing women as well. And she was a Buddhist. And she led her adventurous and flamboyant life with an iron will. Sounds fascinating. I've got an article here by Alexandra Guibert. And this is part one of two parts. Louise Eugenie Alexandra Marie David was born in 1868 near Paris to a French Protestant Republican and Freemason father and a Roman Catholic Belgian mother. It's a good mix. The family settled in Belgium near Brussels, and Alexandra studied at a Calvinist and then a Catholic boarding school. Enthralled by tales of the French writer Jules Verne and armed with an atlas given to her by her father, she dreamed very early of travelling, so much so that at the age of 15, during a family vacation on the Belgian coast, she ran away from home to undertake her first expedition abroad and got as far as the Netherlands but had to give up for lack of money and so was reunited with her family. From her early childhood days, Alexandra evinced a growing interest in spirituality, broadening her reading from Christian scriptures to ancient philosophy. A biblical saying became her rule of conduct for life: walk in the ways of thine heart and in sight of thine eyes, which is Ecclesiastes 11:9. As a teenager, inspired by reading biographies of the saints, she followed a rigorous spiritual discipline that included fasting and corporal chastisement as a teenager. The family circle provided Alexandra with an early exposure to socialist, anarchist, and feminist ideologies, in particular thanks to frequent visits by libertarian geographer and militant French anarchist Elise Reclus. I think I said that right.
Elisée Reclus. At meetings and in newspaper writings, under the pseudonym Mitra, she championed the economic emancipation of women. Not bad for a teenager, eh? The 19th century saw the confrontation of two dominant ideologies, Christianity, which advocated a narrow and authoritarian puritanism, and a scientific materialism, which was led by French philosopher and writer Auguste Comte. A third prong surfaced in the form of spiritualism and occultism, which gained prominence. Alexandra felt drawn to these movements and their novel ideas. During a stay in London, she discovered and became a member of the Theosophical Society. I'm sure most of you will have heard of the Theosophical Society, an esoteric organization founded by the Russian lady Helena Blavatsky in 1875. It promoted universal brotherhood, the study of comparative religion, philosophy and science, and the study of natural law and human potential. Now, at the same time, Alexandra joined and helped spearhead the first co-Masonic order, known as the International Order of Mixed Free Race Freemasonry, or Le Droit Humain. She found her calling as an Orientalist during a stay in Paris. A visit to the Goumet Asian Arts Museum proved a revelation for her, and Buddhism became her main focus. She decided to learn Sanskrit and Tibetan, and in 1889, at the age of 21, she converted to Buddhism, which she considered a philosophy rather than a religion, and adopted it as her own. She was an independent woman with a strong will, and she was taken by the Buddhist injunction, be your own light, be your own refuge. Now she was officially an adult, and Alexandra became financially independent of her parents by taking up singing. After studying piano and voice at the Royal Conservatory of Brussels, she was awarded a first prize in singing and became a professional opera singer under the name of Alexandra Myriel, M-Y-R-I-A-L, Alexandra Myriel, taking engagements in Hanoi, Athens, and Tunis. During the stay in Tunis, she met Philippe Neil de Saint-Savoir, I think I said that right, whom she married in 1904. Her activities as a singer and artistic director of the casino in Tunis did not sway her from her deep-seated interest in the Orient and Buddhism, and she began to write and publish articles in newspapers. In 1911, she went alone on a study to the Orient, leaving her husband on a promise that she would return in 18 months. Actually, their reunion took place in 1925, 14 years later. They made up for their separation by an abundant correspondence, and by Philippe's financial support, she was enabled to quench her unquenchable thirst for discovery and learning. She arrived in India in 1912, and interested in Hinduism as she was in Buddhism, she visited many temples and monasteries and had discussions with adherents in order to perfect her knowledge of these two religions. She also read many religious texts in order to better understand the essence of the doctrines, and she engaged in regular meditation. During her stay in Sikkim in India, Alexandra befriended the sovereign's eldest son, who was next in line to the throne and who was eager to reform the kingdom, and avidly listened to her advice. She lived for several years in the area, where she received instruction from Lachen Gongchen Rinpoche, an abbot of a Tibetan Buddhist monastery. She practiced meditation intensively and took up Tibetan yogic practices, such as that of Tummo, which generates internal heat. Her master conferred upon her the religious name of Yeshitom, which is Lamp of Wisdom, and she would henceforth be recognized by Buddhist authorities throughout her travels. Alexandra met the 13th Dalai Lama, Thumdum Gyatso, who was deeply intrigued by this Western woman who had converted to Buddhism, and demanding so many explanations and teachings of the Buddha. He advised her to learn Tibetan, which she did. And she followed in the footsteps of the Buddha by retracing the different stages of his life in Nepal and India. In 1914, she met Afur Yongden, a 15-year-old monk who became her travel companion and whom she adopted as her own son in 1929. In 1916, Alexandra left for Tibet, visiting the monastery of Tashilhunpo in Shigatse, where she was received by the Panchen Lama, who awarded her the honorary titles of Lama and Doctor of Tibetan Buddhism. As the First World War was now in swing, Alexandra decided to visit India, Japan, Korea, China, and Mongolia before returning to Tibet, a journey which took several years. She finally entered Lhasa in Tibet in 1924, disguised as a pilgrim. Upon her return to France in 1925, she became quite famous for managing to enter the city, which was strictly forbidden to foreigners. She made another trip between 1937 and 1946, when she went to China to study Taoism. However, the Sino-Japanese War forced her to flee the fighting and return to Tibet for a five-year retreat. She eventually re-entered India and from there returned to France. At the age of 100 years old, she asked to renew her passport should she wish to contemplate any new excursions. That's quite a thing, isn't it, at the age of 100? According to Benjamin Krem's master, Alexandra was a 1.7 degree initiate who was working on mental polarization. This point in spiritual evolution, combined with her spiritual discipline and tireless determination, may explain how she came under the wing of a High Lama. She was initiated into certain advanced esoteric practices, such as the creation of a familiar through thought power, and she created a big jovial monk who eventually escaped her control and she had to dematerialize him. Such techniques require considerable concentration and mental control. In 1928, she acquired a small house in France, which she enlarged and transformed into a Lamaist sanctuary. She named her hermitage Samtien Zong, or Fortress of Meditation. It was here that she wrote many of her books about her travels and the various facets of Buddhism. The publication of her travelogue, My Journey to Lhasa, contributed greatly to her fame and opened the way for many major book tours in France and Germany. Her books are noteworthy and a source of information on Buddhism, as might well be expected, but also on Hinduism and Taoism. They also provide information about daily life in the country she visited. It is not only, therefore, a religious and spiritual body of work that she has bequeathed to her readers, but also an anthropological treatise on the everyday of life. Buddhism, however, remains the heart of her literary teaching. Through books such as The Buddhism of the Buddha, Alexandra shows a true mastery of the history, the doctrine, and the evolution of this philosophy, which so deeply and lastingly marked her existence. Regretfully, however, academics do not seem to fully appreciate the work of this erudite researcher who works so tirelessly beyond their normal bounds. Despite the ideological constraints of her time, which placed women in a position of inferiority and dependence on men, and despite the major obstacles she encountered throughout her travels to the ends of the world, Alexandra David Neal never wavered in her quest to become and remain a free woman, to assert personal ideas which were often groundbreaking and even revolutionary, and to tirelessly pursue spiritual knowledge in order to understand it, to practice and to share it. Her extraordinary destiny is not necessarily an example for all to follow. She'd be a hard act to follow, I tell you that. But it does remain the embodiment of an essential truth that every human being can freely choose his or her own way and face the inevitable adversity of being one's own light. David Neil wrote over 30 books about Eastern religion, philosophy, and her travels. And that was part one. Part two will focus on some of the writings of Madame David Neil, highlighting her spiritual insights and exploring the significance of her intuitions. And some of her books in English, Magic and Mystery in Tibet, Initiations and Initiates in Tibet, Buddhism, Its Doctrines and Its Methods, Secret Oral Teachings in Tibetan Buddhist Sects, and that one was co-written by Albert Arthur Yongden. So, that's Madame Alexandra David Neil, subtitled Will in Action. Fantastic. There's a lot of these unsung people, these adventurers who forayed into parts that most people never get to. Murdo MacDonald Bain was a Scottish adventurer and spiritualist. He wrote a number of books. The one that I've read is called Beyond the Himalayas, and I can't recommend that one too much. It's an absolutely fantastic book, and I must read some more of Alexandra David Neil. To finish the program, I would like to read a message from Maitreya. This was given in 1980. It's message 113, and it was given to his, I suppose, followers, the people who work with him, for him, for the emergence of the spiritual hierarchy and the world teacher Maitreya. My dear friends, I am happy indeed to be with you once more in this way and to greet you as a brother. That is my true status in relation to mankind, and as a brother indeed shall I work for you, showing you the simple path to the future, the lighted way to God, releasing to you the laws of God. My plans proceed well. All aspects move forward apace. This being so, little time indeed remains for you to create the climate of hope. Once again, my friends, I exhort you to this end. Much may you do by simple means. Reveal the fact of my presence in the world and open to the future the hearts of men. My plans have many phases. From now on, I enter one such. Before this year is out, I shall have completed the phase of approach. With the dawn of 1981, we'll begin that of a broader sight. In this immediate coming time, my face will become known to millions. From that time forth will spread abroad the knowledge of my presence. Take then, my friends, your stand in the vanguard and work for me. Many now await my presence and expect my return. How could I disappoint these blessed ones? No, my friends, from the heart of man has risen the cry, and to that cry for succor have I responded. Likewise from me shall come a cry for help. From me shall issue the cry of man's heart. In your response to that cry of anguish shall you find your divinity. Thus shall it be, my friends. Thus shall I know my people. Take it upon yourselves to make known my presence and reveal yourselves as gods. May the divine light and love and power of the one most holy God be now manifest within your hearts and minds. May this manifestation lead you to see your duty as workers at my side. And that concludes the program. Interesting times we live in regarding the economics of the world. All I can say is that Maitreya is ever closer. Thank you for listening. Blessings, everyone.